Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from USA Today. So what do you know about the Grammy Awards? Well, here's a couple of questions about this upcoming annual music event. Question number one, in which decade was the very first Grammy Award ceremony? Was that A, the 1930s, B, the 1940s, C, 1950s, or D, the 1960s? First Grammy Award ceremony. Which decade was that anyway? And question number two, who was the first person to be awarded the Best New Artist Grammy? Was that A, Frank Sinatra, B, Bobby Darin, C, Elvis Presley, or D, Janis Joplin? First awardee of the Best New Artist Grammy. Who was that anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of January the 10th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1928 that Old Man River was recorded by Paul Whiteman and his orchestra. Bing Crosby was the song's featured vocalist. The song is from the Broadway musical Showboat, 1928 today. And it was 61 years ago today, 1964, that Ring of Fire by Johnny Cash became the first country album to top the U.S. pop album chart. And that was 1964 today. Dvorak's Songs My Mother Taught Me introduces our classical music news. It's titled, In the Right Hands, Old Instruments Bring New Life to American Music. This is written by Michael Andor Brodeur on the 19th of December, 2024, in the Washington Post. On Wednesday night at the Library of Congress, the opportunity to hear some of history's most finely crafted instruments doubled as a chance to hear one of the top string quartets of today. In a program titled American Snapshots, the Grammy-winning Pacifica Quartet performed a compelling selection of American-made and themed pieces on the library's treasured Stradivari string instruments. The collection of three violins, one viola, and one violoncello, all crafted by Antonio Stradivari between 1697 and 1704, were gifted to the library in 1935 and explicitly intended to be used for concerts. This annual tradition has grown so popular that the library extended the Pacifica stay to 2 nights. Soon available for viewing on the Library of Congress YouTube channel. With the focus trained so sharply on the sounds and textures of American music of the 20th century, or in the case of Dvorak's 1893, American Quartet, music that would presage its direction, one might have missed the other programmatic revelation, the elasticity of the quartet form. Even on unfamiliar instruments, the Pacifica players rose to the challenge of telling both stories. The article skips down and ends with this. Both violinists remained in captivating sync throughout, a tidiness that never impacted the earthy feel of the music, and the instruments themselves contributed to the quartet's intimate reading. A thrilling finale was charged with conspicuous optimism. It landed like an unspoken assurance that somewhere beyond the conflict and crosstalk of American life, harmony awaits. T-Bone Walker's Stormy Monday introduces our blues music news. It's titled The 47 Best Blues Songs of All Time. This is written by Brett Milano on the 9th of February 2024 in YouDiscoverMusic.com. The great blues artists talked, the savviest rockers listened. Without the blues, there'd be no rock and roll. But certain tracks were especially pivotal. Either they were famously covered, or the licks got borrowed, or they schooled the rockers in style and attitude. Many of the most influential blues songs reverberate to this day. Suffice to say that if Robert Johnson had never gone to the crossroads, or if B.B. King was still feeling a thrill, the world would be a poorer place. We start with B.B. King, The Thrill Is Gone. Producer Bill Shimshick caused a small revolution when he added a string section to this track. One of the many smooth ballads that B.B. King recorded in the 1960s. Thrill Is Gone wasn't the first record to fuse blues with pop, but it was the smoothest and most successful to date, hitting number 15 as a pop record, and setting the stage for many crossovers to come. Then there's Robert Johnson's Me and the Devil Blues. One of the last recordings he made, released in 1938, this classic fable about Satan calling in a debt helped to fuel the long-held myth that Johnson had made a Faustian pact with the devil at a crossroads, exchanging his soul for musical success. The fact that Johnson died in mysterious circumstances not long afterwards made the record seem prophetic. It became a touchstone for later blues musicians, including Eric Clapton. And then there's Muddy Waters' Got My Mojo Working. Why does this classic reign over the top of most of these lists? For one thing, few songs ever embodied the swagger and mystery of the blues better than this one. The singer is lovelorn, despite the foolproof hoodoo charm in his pocket. And as a million garage bands can tell you, the song just feels great to play. It was recorded by Muddy Waters in 1957. Then there's Etta James, dubbed Miss Peaches, Janisetta Jackson Hawkins is more familiar to blues and soul fans as Etta James. James racked up an astonishing 30 hits in the U.S. R&B singles chart between 1955 and 1978. And inspired artists as diverse as Beyoncé, Rod Stewart, and Dua Lipa to record it. T-Bone Walker's Stormy Monday, which opened this particular article, covered for good reason by hundreds of bands. This is one of the songs that wrote the book on the electric guitar. T-Bone Walker's original 1947 version doesn't even have a big solo. The magic is in the fluid runs he plays after each line in the verses, along with the hard strum chords to punctuate his Lord Have Mercy. The only way the Allman Brothers could improve upon it was to stretch it to 10 minutes. And then there's Muddy Waters, Rollin' and Tumblin'. Though he was born in the Mississippi Delta region, the cradle of the blues, Muddy Waters became synonymous with the electric sound of Chicago blues. This 1950 record was a spirited revamp of a 1929 tune and found Waters punctuating his soulful growl with searing slide guitar licks. Then there's Bessie Smith, Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out. She was dubbed, with some justification, the Empress of the Blues. Bessie Smith's influence permeated popular music for many years afterwards. Among the many female singers who fell under her spell were Diana Washington and Billie Holiday. Bo Diddley, I'm a Man. Bo Diddley, is the major recording artist of the 1950s as part of Chicago's electric blues scene, and he recorded I'm a Man in 1955 as the B-side to his debut single, Bo Diddley. Both sides of the record were popular and jointly rose to number one in the U.S. R&B chart. Diddley's tune was particularly influential on British rock bands, including the Yardbirds and The Who. Then there's Muddy Waters' Hoochie Coochie Man. Few songs have defined an artist as clearly as this Willie Dixon song did for Muddy Waters. Its stop-time arrangement was innovative for a blues song in 1954, but it's the eternal swagger of the lyric that really grabs hold. The singer is so powerful, especially with the opposite sex, that a quote-unquote gypsy woman has to warn his mom in advance. And in music research and technology, 7 life lessons we can learn from being a musician. This is written by Eileen Carey on September 9, 2023, in themusicmom.wordpress.com. We are always on the lookout for creative and meaningful ways to teach our kids important life lessons. With its captivating blend of melody and rhythm, music offers a unique platform for imparting wisdom that extends far beyond the confines of musical notes. Here are 7 essential lessons that kids can learn through enriching experiences of playing, writing, and performing music. 1 is discipline and practice. The lesson? Lessons require dedication and consistent effort. Listening and learning to play a musical instrument demands discipline and practice. Kids quickly realize that to master a piece, they must invest time and effort. This lesson transcends the practice room, instilling the value of perseverance and hard work in all aspects of life. Then 2, creativity and expression. The lesson? Embrace your uniqueness and express yourself authentically. Music serves as a canvas for creativity. When kids write their own songs or experiment with musical improvisation, they learn to embrace their unique ideas and express themselves authentically. This lesson encourages them to think outside the box and trust in their creative instincts. 3. Collaboration and teamwork. The lesson? Success often involves working together. Ensemble playing, whether in a band, orchestra, or choir, teaches kids the importance of collaboration. They must listen, adapt, and harmonize with others to create beautiful music, or if they're just beginning, something resembling a cohesive sound. This experience fosters teamwork skills that are invaluable in school, relationships, and future careers. 4. Resilience in the face of challenges. Lesson: mistakes are opportunities for growth. In the world of music, mistakes are an integral part of the learning process, and we all know they're going to happen. Kids discover that setbacks are not failures, but stepping stones towards improvement. This resilience serves them well in facing challenges with a positive attitude. 5. Confidence and performance skills. The lesson? Self-assurance and effective communication are keys to success. Taking the stage to perform music can be a transformative experience for kids. It nurtures self-confidence and hones their ability to communicate effectively, not just through words, but also through their music. These skills empower them to face audiences and life's challenges with poise. 6. Patience and attention to detail. Lesson: experience is achieved through careful attention to detail. When practicing music, children learn the value of patience and meticulous attention to detail. They discover that the smallest nuances can significantly impact the overall performance. This lesson translates into a keen eye for detail in academics and everyday tasks. And 7, time management and organization. Lesson: balancing commitments is key to success. Maintaining a practice schedule alongside school and other activities requires effective time management. Kids learn to prioritize tasks, set goals, and manage their time efficiently, skills that prove invaluable in juggling responsibilities later in life. The world of music offers a rich tapestry of life lessons for our kids. Whether they're mastering an instrument, composing their own melodies, or performing on stage, these experiences teach them discipline, creativity, collaboration, resilience, confidence, patience, and effective time management.
My gift is my song, and this one's for you. And you can tell everybody this is your song. It may be quite simple, but now that it's done, I hope you don't mind. I hope you don't mind that I put down in words how wonderful life is while you're in.
Elton John's Your Song introduces our rock and pop music news. The article's titled, Elton John Says He's Lost His Eyesight. This is written by Jack Guy, CNN, December the 2nd, 2024. Elton John says he still cannot see, months after suffering a severe eye infection. Speaking on stage at a gala performance of The Devil Wears Prada musical in London on Sunday, John thanked David Furnish, saying, "He has been my rock. I haven't been able to come to many of the previews because, as you know, I have lost my eyesight, so it's hard for me to see it, but I love to hear it, and boy, it sounded good tonight," said John, who wrote the score for the show. In an interview with Good Morning America last week, John said the issue has been affecting his ability to work. I unfortunately lost my eyesight in the right eye in July because I had an infection in the south of France, and it's been 4 months now since I haven't been able to see. And my left eye is not the greatest, he said. So there's hope and encouragement that it will be okay, but I'm kind of stuck at the moment because I can do something like this, the interview. But going into the studio and recording, I don't know, because I can't see a lyric for a start. John, who's 77, first spoke publicly about his sight problem in September when he shared on his Instagram page that he had been dealing with a severe eye infection that has unfortunately left me with only limited vision in one eye. I'm hearing and I'm healing, but it's an extremely slow process, and it will take some time before the sight returns to the impacted eye, John wrote. I have been quietly recuperating at home, adding that he is feeling positive about the progress I've made in my healing and recovery thus far. While John officially retired from touring in 2023, after decades of performing live, he wrote the music for the musical of The Devil Wears Prada. It is based on the 2003 novel by Lauren Weisberger, which was also turned into a movie in 2006. So, how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, in which decade was the very first Grammy Award ceremony? Was that A, the 1930s, B, the 1940s, C, 1950s, or D, the 1960s? And the correct answer is answer C, the 1950s. And the answer to our second question, who was the first person to be awarded the Best New Artist Grammy? Was that A, Frank Sinatra, B, Bobby Darin, C, Elvis Presley, or D, Janis Joplin? And the correct answer is answer B, Bobby Darin. The answers to both of these two questions are covered in a recent January 3, 2025 article in USA Today, written by Olivia Munson, entitled What is a Grammy? A Quick History of the Prestigious Music Award. As the article states, there are four major awards that creatives can achieve in their lifetime. The coveted EGOT, that's E-G-O-T, distinction, stands for Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony. Those who claim this quartet of awards are in outstanding company in the entertainment industry. The Grammy, or the G, honors those in the music industry, celebrating excellence across genres and the globe. Its annual ceremony recognizes many categories, with this year's 67th Grammy Award ceremony on February the 2nd, featuring 94 distinct awards. But how did the Grammy Trophy become the most revered symbol of musical achievement? Here is a history lesson on the Golden Gramophone. When was the first Grammy Awards? Well, the first Grammy Awards ceremony took place in the 1950s on May the 4th, 1959, and honored those who released music in the previous year. There were 28 categories awarded, including three of the current Big Four. Record of the Year and Song of the Year both went to Domenico Modugno, as well as Franco Migliacci in the later category for Volare, while Henry Mancini won Album of the Year with The Music from Peter Gunn. The Best New Artist category was first awarded at the second annual Grammy Award ceremony, going to Bobby Darin. So what is a Grammy? Well, the Grammy Awards are an annual ceremony that recognizes music industry professionals for their achievements during a specific eligibility period. At this year's ceremony, recordings were to have been released between September 16, 2023, and August 30, 2024, in order to be nominated. The Recording Academy presents the awards with its categories honoring producing, songwriting, and performing. The awards span genres including pop, jazz, electronic, rock, R&B, and reggae. Other distinctions include awards for album packaging, instrumental composition, and arrangement. The Big Four Grammy categories fall in the general field and are considered to be the most prestigious and notable awards. They are Album of the Year, Record of the Year, Song of the Year, and Best New Artist. Who votes on the Grammys? Well, the Grammy Award winners are chosen by the Recording Academy members, meaning the award show is peer voted. According to the Recording Academy, the voting process begins when artists and music professionals submit their work for consideration. The submissions are screened by more than 350 experts to confirm eligibility and category placement. Voting then takes place, and to ensure the quality of voting, members are directed to vote only in those fields in which they are peers of the nominees. The Recording Academy states, meaning members are encouraged to cast their 10 allotted votes only in the categories they are most familiar with. All members can cast votes in the Big Four general categories. Once final rounds are finished, ballots are tabulated by an independent accounting firm. The winners are announced live during the Grammy Award ceremony, and that's arriving this coming Groundhog's Day, February 2nd, 2025. This year's nominees include John Batiste, Miley Cyrus, Olivia Rodrigo, Taylor Swift, Beyoncé, Billie Eilish, and Post Malone. But let's close out today's program with the very first person to be awarded the Best New Artist. That was back in 1960. Here, then, is Bobby Darin with Beyond the Sea. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time. Yeah, never again, I'll go say.